Mr. Connor is a registered representative and managing principal with Connor Wealth Management. Securities offered through Commonwealth Financial Network, member FINRA, SIPC. Opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the host, its guests, and callers, and not those of WLVL, its management, staff, or sponsors. Nothing contained in this program should be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell a security, and if applicable, only after the prospectus has been read and understood by the customer. These decisions can only be made after consideration of an investor's investment objective and the investment suitability.
Good morning, folks. It is Friday, July 1st, and we are here with Eric Connor from Connor Wealth Management here in WLVL 1340 AM, 105.3 FM, and streaming worldwide at WLVL.com. So if you have any questions for Mr. Connor or anything like that, you can certainly feel free to call us at 433-1433. And Mr. Connor is located at 5860 Snyder Drive here in Lockport. And if you would like to have a consultation with him concerning your portfolio or wealth, you can make an appointment at his office at 439-1143. That's 439-1143. So good morning, Eric. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
I am happy, happy, happy. Getting ready for the weekend.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you're stuck in here in the morning. Not stuck in a bad way, but you're in here working, and you look outside, you see the sunshine, you know it's warm, and you know you got a long weekend, and you're like, tick-tock, let's get to the end, right? You get to enjoy the sunshine and the rest of the day in just a little while.
Yeah, the finish line is looking pretty close here. It's 5 hours is quite a bit of time to be on the air, but I don't mind. I love every minute of it, and the time really goes fast when you're on the air. Boy, it's just. You know, most people look at the clock and go, geez, I'm going to be over in an hour. And I go, geez, I only got an hour.
It's a funny thing, right? The format that you guys run in the morning, you're not just trying to talk off the top of your head for an hour straight. You know, you've got your commercial breaks and you've got your this and you got your that in the morning show. And it really does just move along so quickly. And all of a sudden, you're like, holy cow, yeah, we just clicked off another hour of the morning show.
Yeah, it is a quick pace. There's no question about that. So you're a sports guy, right?
I am.
And did you see the article in the paper this morning about Mr. Roy Kenyon?
Isn't that fantastic?
Just for the listeners who are just now tuning in, Roy Kenyon is a gentleman that just turned 100 years old. And back in the day, he had a very promising baseball career. But he got called to serve in World War II and wasn't able to do that. So he's a World War II veteran. He's a hero, and he's 100 years old. And so the Bisons, God bless their soul, offered him a 1-day contract to be a Buffalo Bison, and he is going to throw the first ceremonial pitch on July 4th. For the Bisons game, and I just think that's great over at Salem Field. And, of course, that's the same time that Lockport's own Joshua Vacanti is going to be singing after the baseball game with the Buffalo Philharmonic under the direction of Dr. Paul Farrington. And then after that, of course, is the fireworks. So this is just huge for the Lockport community to be dead center involved with everything that's going on, even in Buffalo.
It's just a fantastic snapshot of how small the world is in terms of big events with those local connections, and what a great way to honor Mr. Kenyon. I don't know him, and when I first heard of the story, I was flabbergasted. You know, just thinking, what a fantastic way to bring it back full circle for him and have him there on July 4th. I think it's fantastic. It's great news. It's great, you know, it's a great little burst for Lockport. But what a neat thing for the Bisons to do for him. What else could you, you think as you get older, you think like, I don't need anything for my birthday. I don't need anything for Christmas or whatever.
Right.
What a great surprise to bring to him as he makes it to 100, and to take him back to something that he absolutely loved doing and playing in his youth. And then, you know, as you mentioned, like, he heroically went off to fight in World War II, which is, you know, the patriotic duty of Americans back then was, absolutely, sign me up. We're going.
That's right.
And, you know, all those men and women who served and put their dreams on hold and their lives on hold. And it's a great, great story for the Bisons and for Mr.
Absolutely.
Kenyon. It's fantastic.
And a great tribute to all those that didn't come back.
That's right.
As well. I know I'm always bragging about my Uncle Jack. He's 94 years old. Lied about his age. Joined the Merchant Marines when he was like 16. So he did a tour with the Merchant Marines and then came back, got off of that, then joined the Navy and finished fighting World War II in the Navy. And yeah. he's got awards that just got to him last year. His Purple Heart just got to him last year. He got an award from the Russian consulate for saving a bunch of lives when he was in the Merchant Marines, because back then Russia was on the same side as we were.
That's right.
And some other countries in there that I don't remember what they were, but he got like three or four awards when he was 93. So, you know, sometimes the wheels spin a little bit slow.
That's right. That's right.
At least he got the recognition he needed. And then, of course, we had a family reunion last year. And do you think he would bring the awards with him up from Florida? No, he is so humble. He's just a life of humility. He's like, I don't need to bring them things up. You guys know about them. And that was it.
Yeah. You know, I was given those awards, but I don't want to talk about it, right? That's the mindset of so many of those very, very kind, humble, generous veterans. They know there were a lot of losses, and they don't want to be singled out for. They often don't want to be singled out for bravery because they know how many sacrifices were right next to them.
Survivor's remorse is in there, and just basic humility.
That's right. You know,
and they saw things that they don't want to talk about. Because it was absolutely gruesome, brutal. Any war is gruesome and brutal.
Yeah.
Speaking of gruesome and brutal, how's the stock market doing today? I haven't had a chance to check it.
Well, we're down a little bit today.
Okay.
And as we turn the calendar to July, that means we close the book on the first half of the year. And brutal would be one adjective you could use for the first half of the year. Challenging could be one. You know, and the big challenge has been overall, there have not been places to hide. So if you were on the bond side, you had a decline in value. If you're on the stock side, even if you were playing sort of what you might call the inflation trade, you're behind the curve for the first half, most likely. And kind of, unless you were in cash and unless you were in some guaranteed product like a certificate of deposit or a fixed annuity, you're a little underwater year to date. But there's an interesting article on CNBC.com this morning, and I'll give the detail in a quick snapshot, and maybe it'll provide a little bit of hope as we turn to July and we look at the second half of the year. It turns out that this is the worst beginning of a year since 1970, which I was a little surprised about because we've had some duds along the way where we've had declines, but the S&P in the first half did as poorly as back in 1970 or since 1970. And in 1970, the S&P 500 was down 21% in the first half.
Woo.
Not great. And where it's kind of in line, I don't know where the final number measured out as of yesterday. So forgive me, but let's just say we're in the ballpark of that. I think it's actually around 18.5%, but I could be wrong because again, the last couple days of the month really starts moving those numbers around. So
sure.
But here's the interesting thing. In 1970, the market was weak because of inflation.
Oh, geez.
Not you know, sometimes history doesn't repeat, but it rhymes, right? So here we are 52 years later with a weak first half, and again, geared around inflation, right? The economy has been relatively strong, even though some of the GDP numbers look a little funky in the first quarter. As we talked about in the past, that's because of the lack of government stimulus spending. But, you know, the consumer has made it through fairly well right now. They haven't drastically cut back on things. They've just spent more money. And so we'll have to see how the second quarter shakes out when that news comes out in about a month or so.
Right. No.
But the interesting thing to 1970 is that the second half was up 26.5% in the second half of the year. So a very rough start in 1970. First half of the year, again, down 21%. Second half, up 26%, which basically the math gets funny. You know, if you start at 100 and you're down 21%, it means you're at 79%.
Right.
If you then go up 26% from there, you're actually a little bit back above where you started the year.
Sure.
So I would not be so bold as to predict that's how our year itself is going to end, that we're going to have that strong of a rally, because the market is still going to behave based on what inflation is doing. And so if we get some moderating numbers on the inflation front, I think we'll see an improved stock market. But on the other side, if inflation still remains at above expected levels, you'll continue, I think, to see some trouble in the stock and bond market. So if you could magically figure out when inflation peaks and starts coming down, then I think that the behavior of the market will resemble that peak and then decline, where the market will respond favorably once the inflation rate starts moderating itself. And again, as we've talked in the past, that's why the Fed is raising interest rates, to try to tamp down inflation. They raise interest rates to create kind of a higher cost of doing business. It reduces demand. That reduced demand helps with the rate of inflation.
Interesting. So, folks, we're talking with Eric Conner from Conner Wealth Management here at WLVL. If you have any questions, comments, thoughts, or concerns, you can certainly feel free to give us a call at 433-1433 here at WLVL. And if you would like to have a consultation with Mr. Conner in his office at 5860 Snyder Drive, you can call his office at 439-1143. That's 439-1143 for Conner Wealth Management. So, I've found it curious that people are just spending more to keep up with their lifestyles as they want to maintain them right now. Where are they getting that money? Are they putting it on the MasterCard?
It's a good question. So, there's a couple things you can look at. One of them is about credit card spending. There is some industry data that exists about credit card utilization. And I think we got a call right now.
I think we do.
Great.
All right. Good morning, caller. You are on WLVL with Mr. Eric Conner. What is your thought or comment or concern?
Good morning, Eric.
Eric squared.
We were thinking to keep an eye on the Fed and the interest rate increases. They call for three more. I think that has a big bearing on it. Also, what are your thoughts in that area?
No, I agree. It all goes hand in hand, right? So the Fed has sort of laid out, they don't try to hide their intentions like 10 and 20 and 30 and 40 years ago. They kind of try to lead the market towards what their thinking is. So they've basically laid out a plan to raise interest rates as they meet. Their schedule is basically every 6 weeks. They've laid out a plan to raise rates all through the year. The part that's changed a little is that they did raise more than they had originally expected. So they've gone a little bit faster because the inflation numbers have been a little bit higher than they had originally thought. So as they will meet towards the end of July, and then they won't meet at all in August because of the way the 6 weeks works. They'll be back together in September. And I don't do a lot. I try to not do too much peer prediction here on the air. But I would say it's pretty certain they're going to raise rates in both July and September. The way those inflation numbers look, I can't imagine a scenario where they don't. The real question in the moment, it looks like they'll probably raise 50 basis points in July. That could still change.
Hasn't the inflation rate month over month sort of slid back down from the rate of increase?
Yeah, it's interesting. There have been a couple of data points in both the April and May numbers to show some parts of inflation have started to come down a little bit. But then there's another, because there's a thing called producer price index. There's the consumer price index. So there's a couple different ways that the government tracks inflation. So there has been a little moderation in a couple of spots, but I think the way that number, and I think it might have been on the news at the top of the hour, the number that came out of May was still a little higher than they really had anticipated. So I think the Fed's probably in line for 50 basis points in July. I don't think in the moment, I don't think they'll do another 75 like they just did. But I think it's pretty certain that they're going to keep raising rates at this point because inflation is well above their hoped for number, which really they shoot for 2 to 2.5%. So even on these numbers that have moderated a little bit, the last figure that I saw was 4.6% year over year. So that's even on – that's still twice above what the Fed's really looking for.
We'll wait and see what happens. My thought would have been for them to encourage the continuing slide a little bit by dropping back to a quarter. But we'll have to wait and see, I guess.
Yeah, I think what we'll have, their trend line number, the goal that they're trying to get to seems to be that 3 to 3.25% rate for what's known as federal funds rate. And, and they're still well below 2. So that tells us that if their goal is to get to 3 by the end of the year, they need to move probably 50 basis points, then another 50 basis points, and then we might start looking at the quarter point rate increases. But we'll have to see.
We'll keep our eyes and ears open and see what happens.
Thanks so much for the call.
All right. Thanks, Colin.
Thank you, Eric. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Good call. Good questions.
It is. And it's, again, that idea of what the Fed tries to lay out a game plan, but then they adjust the game plan depending on what news is coming in. So eventually we'll get to where we're back to 25 percentage points for a rate increase. But right now they're at 50 basis points, and they did just raise 75 because inflation ran hotter than they thought. Mm-hmm. So as that moderates, then they'll be able to back it off to just 25 basis points. But I think in this time period where it's still running hotter than they had anticipated at the beginning, that they're going to go at 50 basis points is my guess for the next two meetings. We'll see. We'll see how it is. We'll see if they can back off of that at all. You know, the headline at the top of your hour was that gas has been down 17 straight days nationally, which, judging at the kind of number that they put in that data, it also seems like maybe it's one penny a day for 17 days.
Yes.
I guess all we can say is, well, at least it's down.
I mean, not going up at the moment.
A penny a day is not very exciting.
No, it's not.
But at least it stopped going up. And I'll just point out, in that whole if it's now, you know, 17 days is 2.5 weeks. There hasn't been any magical oil news, right? There hasn't been some
nothing
new production find. There hasn't been some new supply brought online. It is just, you know, kind of like I say, that ebb and flow of pricing and maybe the jawboning, the talking that President Biden and some others have done in press conferences. Maybe that did help with some of the pricing issues, but, you know.
Well, he did give the oil companies a pretty good finger wagon there.
Yeah, yeah, that's the jawboning expression, yes. You know, where okay. you come out and you get in front of a microphone and you yap, 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 and,
right.
and try to shame them into some lower prices. You know, it can have a modest effect. It does not have a dramatic effect, quite honestly.
Clearly.
You know, you look at the two things politicians really like on a national level, really like to talk about are drug prices and energy prices. And the solution, of course, is pass different laws. And their usual MO is, well, we're going to just come out and yell into this microphone and say,
cut it out.
Give us better prices. Well, there's a way to create that situation, and it's not just yelling into a microphone.
Sure.
So,
yeah, I think, you know, with the gas prices, of course, the companies are going to take advantage of the busiest season of the year now.
Absolutely.
You know, 51% of people plan to travel more than 50 miles from the house. I think that's what I heard on the news.
That's a big number.
That's a big number.
And like I mentioned over the last couple visits here, there's no shortage of demand in terms of, so your point is about the demand to drive.
Correct.
My point in prior shows was about airline travel. Look at the fiasco of airline travel right now. It's, yes, there's a lot of cancellations because of flight crew issues, but there's also a tremendous demand for tickets, which I will just say, of course, people were tied up for most of 2 years with a pandemic. So, of course, there's a lot of demand
sure.
for airline tickets, but it creates a bulge in the system, right? And so that jet fuel demand, which again, crude oil gets refined into multiple products, one of it becoming gasoline for us driving our cars, the other byproduct becomes jet fuel for airplanes. So as long as that fuel cost or fuel demand is high, that actually impacts us even on our gasoline price, which
right.
You wouldn't necessarily make that connection day to day. You know, you just go and you want to fill up your gas tank and you think, oh, geez, it's 3 cents more than yesterday or whatever. But there is a correlation to all that interaction where the fact that jet demand is up actually does create a problem for us even when we're fueling up our tank, even though it's not the same actual product.
Yeah, maybe they could make an electric airplane, huh?
Oh my! They do have it. They are working on it.
Really?
And I just think I can't imagine. Picture flying out of Buffalo. I could envision a scenario where if you know the weather is sunny, and you say, "Okay, I need to fly from Buffalo to New York City," because that's only an hour flight.
Yeah, nice short.
You
flight.
Say, "Okay, I know the weather's good." They've, you know, let's say they've been flying testing these electric planes for a while. And you go, okay, it's a 1 hour flight. Okay, I'll do that. But holy cow, can you imagine the day when they say, oh, we're going to fly you from Buffalo to California?
No.
Be like, no, you're not.
No, not even close.
I can't envision it. But there are companies spending many, many, many dollars on that. And actually, one of the Google co-founders, I forget if it's Larry Page or Sergey Brin, one of them has invested just tens or hundreds of millions of dollars into an electric airplane project.
Isn't that something?
And I just think that is wacky. To think you'd ever actually get a return on your investment in that, I find it amazing. But, you know, when you're who knows, right? Those Google guys probably have 120 $25 billion or sure. $85 billion or whatever.
Money to burn, literally.
Yeah, whatever the number is, right? They just think, oh, sure, you want $35 billion to try to fly an electric plane 500 miles? Sure, let's work on that.
Sure. Well, the Wright brothers, they didn't think they could fly at all.
So yeah, yeah.
I suppose there's some merit to that. But, you know, as they turned, you know, the administration saying, well, buy electric cars. Well, first off, they're really expensive. And second off, there's a bunch of recalls because the Teslas are catching on fire. And then if everybody bought an electric car, how is the grid going to support them? The electrical grid is antiquated. It's they're having rolling brownouts, you know, throughout the Midwest and Southwest. I don't see how we got a call. We can hold that thought.
Okay.
All right. Good morning, caller. You are on WLVL with Eric Connor from Connor Wealth Management. What is your comment?
Good morning, gentlemen. Eric, I sure enjoy your commentary on your shows. You have some great insights.
Thanks.
At times like this, people who are invested, they're going to say, oh, woe is me, or else others will look at it like, oh, there's some buying opportunities. Well, I'm not really happy with what's going on with my portfolio, but I look at it as, well, these are opportunities to buy, but it might be a little soon. What do you think as far as, in your opinion, should we start maybe buying now, or should we wait? Is it going to go down further?
It's a great question. So you can think of it in a couple different steps, and it partially depends on where your money is in the moment, right? If you've stayed fully invested and you really like your positions, then you might be thinking, when should I add to them, right? Known as dollar cost averaging. The other thing would be if you're out of the market and you're trying to start with fresh cash, when's a good time to go in? So sort of the nickel piece of advice or 2 cents worth of advice, develop a list of what you're target is, right? Whether it's I want to, the NASDAQ's corrected more, so I want to look at some tech stocks, or oil, I think, still has more time to run, so I want to figure out a good energy company to own, or whatever the case might be. So the biggest adjustment that has been happening in the market does not revolve around earnings. And in the long run, earnings drive stock prices. What we've had this year is the adjustment because of the interest rate increases because of inflation. So when you ask about, is it time to look? Is it time to go back in? I would say you want to find right now, you want to find things that are already at a decent price to earnings ratio. And what we had, let's say 6 months ago, we'll go back to the beginning of the year, we had the S&P 500 trading at about 23 or 24 times earnings. Where we're at today, I believe the latest calculation is we're below 20 and we're at about 18 and a half times expected earnings. Okay, you think, okay, that sounds better. But you got to still look at, say, what has it usually been? Where's it really supposed to be? What's the long-term PE number on the market? And I would point you to more like 16 times earnings. So that tells you you still have the potential for a little bit more downside just to get back to where it usually trades. And I think that's kind of a fair answer for what you're looking at. I would say develop a list for what you're interested in. Look at it from a valuation perspective, and my guess is that we probably have a little bit more downside in just the scenario we've got right now, which, again, means is about the inflation slash interest rate adjustment. I think we have a little more downside because of that. You could
I'm kind of looking at it that way. There's been several times the last few months, I said, oh, maybe this is the time to buy. I think it's so low. And then I find out going lower, and I say, oh, maybe now's the time. But yeah, I agree. It's probably more to go. And if it's not, if it starts going up, you're still at such a – things are so low, you're still doing all right.
Yeah, I think the big key in here is it revolves around the valuation of what you're interested in. And so one topic that I get into with a lot of clients around because of where we live, it's a lot of conversations about GM and Ford.
Uh-huh.
And I've sort of pointed to the stock charts of the last few years tracking the price per share. And, you know, we talk about, like, where's the peak and where's the decline showing up on those stock charts? And look how the car companies are right now. If they could produce more, they would sell more. But they can't, right? They truly can't produce some of the cars that they want to produce. They don't have the semiconductors and other supply chain problems. So what's happened? GM is 50% lower today than it was within the last year. Ford is probably a little more than that because I think they've gone from about 21 to 12 or somewhere in there. I don't have it in front of me. It's not that their businesses are a disaster. It's that they can't produce the vehicles that they'd otherwise be able to sell. And that is a scenario where if you're not digging in deep enough, you're going to maybe stumble into a problem, right? Because you might say, like, whoa, Ford's at $12 or $13. And they can sell out, you know, because their announcements are, oh, we've sold all of our electric Ford F-150s. Yeah, well, they sold them all because they can't produce as many as they actually want to. So, you know, the price might go from $12 a share, $13 a share, down to 10 or 9. And that's a pretty good percentage decline. So it takes a little bit of work right now, and you want to just, again, dig into where that valuation is and where that individual market is for those companies. But yes, broadly on the S&P 500, I think we still have a little bit of weakness to come in here. And of course, we're always reevaluating the new news that comes out. But I think most likely the summer is a bit of a dud. I don't really know how to use any other fancier words. I think it's going to be a pretty boring summer for the market. I think we're probably going to have inflation news that we don't like, and the market will probably just sort of drift a little bit lower with moments of good days, of course. But I think we're probably set up in that scenario. And so for you to sort of look where that trigger is going to be, I'd point you at the inflation rate. If you can find the inflation rate coming down, I really think that's going to be the magic spot for the market to move a little bit higher.
Okay. Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for the call.
Okay.
Very good. What a great call.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's a little optimism there and forethought.
Yeah, and keeping his eye on the long view, right?
That's
like,
right.
It's not just about if I buy it today, what's it worth tomorrow?
Right.
Good heavens.
No.
That's the fastest way to turn a lot of money into a little money.
Right, and to drive yourself crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
It's like looking at the clock. You know, it's just watching paint dry. It's just not good for you.
I'll point out there have been many, many studies done over the years of average investors, sophisticated investors, and market professionals. And every study shows the same thing, that the more you look at your positions, the more you'll trade and the worse you'll do.
Really?
Doesn't matter that you're even, like for me, in it licensed, years of experience.
Doesn't matter.
The more I, even, so truly, like I'll, on my own account, if I were to look at my own accounts 5 times a day, I'd get antsy for my own accounts.
Right.
And
right.
I have a super long-term view.
Right.
Right? Just decades into the future.
So you get antsy, then start making bad decisions.
Yeah.
Panic.
Yeah. So even for myself, right? Mm-hmm. You gotta know how that. It's something in our mind about how we ruminate on decisions or agonize over decisions. So yeah, you want to have a clear vision of where you're headed, and you do kind of want to just trust that the decision that you made a week ago or a month ago or 6 months ago was a good decision, and you want that to play out, and you sort of want to have the foresight to know that the day-to-day noise is really a bad enemy for you in terms of your trading behavior, you know, your right. your short-term investment decisions. That's why cable news is such a remarkable bad indicator for that, right? Like you could, you could tune on any of the news channels at 11 o'clock in the morning and it might say, you know, market plummets. And then you tune in mid-afternoon and the market's rebounded and now it says market soars. Well, if you only caught that headline once in the day, that's your feeling for the day.
Right.
Right? Like, oh, the market tanked. And someone be like, what are you talking about? It rebounded in the afternoon. It's fine. Mm-hmm. And so that day-to-day cycle of headlines and the newspaper does it, the cable news channels do it, it plays with your emotions. And when it comes to trading decisions, that's a really, really, really bad cycle to get into. You know, if you just want to hit the headline and then say, well, it said bad things, so I want to pull my money into cash. Well, that might be the absolute worst thing to do in that moment, right? It's just reacting to the headline over and over and over.
Right, because that's a guaranteed loss.
Yeah, yeah.
Guaranteed loss.
Yeah.
That's why we want to depend on financial professionals such as yourself. Speaking of that, I just want to let listeners know that who may be just joining us or coming in late, we are speaking with Eric Connor from Connor Wealth Management. And if you have any questions or comments you would like to call, you can call the station here and speak with him personally at 433-1433. And if you would like to have a consultation with him at his office at 5860 Snyder Drive here in Lockport, you can certainly call the office at 439-1143. That's 439-1143 to make an appointment and talk about your wealth futures.
Not history, futures.
But at any rate, still here in the station for the next 10 minutes or so, 433-1433, if you would like to speak with Mr. Connor. And so where were we? We were somewhere before we picked up with the caller.
Yeah, the calls are great, and it does sort of throw us off track, but
that's okay.
We'll take the calls every time because that's why we're here in terms of answering questions as well as we can.
Absolutely. Yep. So
I had one note to that I wanted to try to hit on and
sure.
hear as we get near the end of the show.
Let's do it.
It makes some sense. So I just wanted to talk about one of the spots that's a little danger aspect to the market and how it plays out slowly sometimes. So several months ago, Kohl's department store was approached about a takeover, and the price per share went up nicely. I think about 20% on this news of like, ooh, like, you know, hands rubbing together, like, ooh, a buyout. Ooh, someone's going to pay up for Kohl's.
Sounds good.
And then they start throwing around a price of $60 a share. Ooh, the market goes up a little more, right? Ooh, great. So then they signed some sort of agreement. It wasn't an actual purchase agreement, but it was like a negotiation agreement, like a non-disclosure privacy. Mm-hmm. We're going to work on coming to a final price type of thing. And time had gone on and no announcement, and the market kind of cooled to that idea. So the price of Kohl's had started ticking lower and lower and lower as time goes on. Well, then, you know, you hear, you eventually have a little news article that says, well, their negotiation, but it doesn't look like it's going to be that $60 price anymore. You know, now it's going to be something lower. And this is similar to what Elon Musk is doing with Twitter.
Sure.
But this is Kohl's. So we won't dive into the Elon Musk world of his mindset. We'll stick with Kohl's for a second. So that had come out in weeks past, and then it kept drifting lower, and it kept drifting a little lower, and it kept drifting a little lower still. And what finally happens, and I think this was after the close yesterday. I don't think this was first thing this morning. But they finally come out and make an announcement that that company that had done all that time, all that investigating, all the non-disclosure, we're going to try to develop a price. The company and them just can't come to an agreement. Uh-oh. And they just end it all. Like, just they walk away from each other, right? It's like sort of being engaged and you suddenly decide to not get married. So today, I just pulled it up so I can give up-to-the-minute type numbers. Kohl's today, after that news, down 22% to $27.76 a share right now. And again, when that was first talked about, it had rallied up above $60 a share because people thought there'd be a bidding war and people thought there'd be, you know, not even that $60 price that got kicked around, that it might even be more, like maybe it would run to 65 or 70, you know, you never know. And it just has slowly, since May, gone from $58 lower and lower and lower, just kind of day by day or week by week, trended lower. Absence of news in this scenario, and absence of news is bad news. And so, you know, a little bit of tidbits here and there, and then finally, wham, here we are on a Friday, end of the first, you know, the first half is over. They finally come out and say, nope, we're not getting married together. You know, there's not going to be a deal. Off we go. So down almost $8, 52-week low, 22% on the day. But again, if you go back to just what it was in the earliest part of May, you were at $58 a share. Oof. You're down 50%. And there are people that investor-wise that get pulled into those deals and they think it's their gold mine, and it just works against them and works against them. And so I'm bringing it up to sort of point out those are the spots that are really dangerous, because you're pinning yourself to that $60 price, and the market kept telling you day after day after day that's not going to come true. And it, from a risk standpoint, you would have wanted to get out of there a whole lot earlier than today when the actual final announcement came down. The market was telling you that it wasn't going to happen.
Right.
So just something to bring up. It does happen over time. There's a lot of deals that go to the end and get completed without a problem. And there are many, many deals, though, that fail to complete. And this is an example that I wanted to bring up to show how devastating that can be. If you bought it up in that range, let's say you bought it at 55 to try to get 60, right? You thought, oh, I'll make $5 guaranteed. Holy cow. You bought it at 55, you're down 50%, and it's not going to go back to that price anytime soon.
No.
The retail environment right now is not your friend. And even if you go back in the calendar many, many months, you'd be hard-pressed to see how you're going to have this stock end up back. Even at 40, you'd be hard-pressed to see how it gets there. So a painful lesson for someone that's just sat through that kind of decline over the last 2 months. But I wanted to, again, bring it up because that's a spot where people sort of think, ooh, this is going to be an easy move, an easy trade. It is not. There is an element of risk until it's signed, sealed, delivered, and finally completed. There is a risk in those trades going bad, those deals going bad. So be on the lookout for that. Again, it's sort of easy to have that feeling like you found a little pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, but it's not always there. These deals go bad all the time like that.
Yeah, and how do you get rich quick? You don't.
You don't.
That's right.
Yeah. Get rich slowly.
That's right. One step at a time, right?
That's right.
One day at a time. Just just like as we've observed, you know, the ebbs and flows of things going on here. I know it's a little discouraging right now because the numbers are down. And when I see my portfolio numbers, I just kind of scratch my head and go, well, it's a good thing I got a job.
There you go. You know? You just keep plugging along. And right. I'll have to make the comment.
Sure.
You're not my client.
Well, if I had known you when I got into this mess, I think, yeah, it might be time to make some changes there. I don't know. Seems like every time I get it in the mail, because I don't watch it. You know what I mean? I just leave it alone.
Yep. And it's, again, generally you create a good plan. You make make good decisions, and you need to stick with it and reevaluate it carefully over time. But the lurching back and forth, yeah, you're not going to come out ahead.
Yeah, I don't want to be that guy.
That's right. You're doing it the right way. Right now, the market's just not helping you in the right direction. Right.
I still have a full head of hair. I want to keep it there.
There you go. That's exactly right.
All right, folks, you've been listening to Eric Conner from Conner Wealth Management here on SFRO and WLVL 1340 AM. We'd like to thank Eric for showing up today. We'll see you again in 2 weeks, maybe, Eric?
2 weeks. I'll be here.
I'm liking it. So if you'd like to speak with Mr. Conner in his office, you can call him at 439-1143. That's 439-1143. And he's located at 5860 Snyder Drive. Final thoughts in 15 seconds, Eric?
Have a safe, long weekend. Enjoy the great weather. And I'll see you in 2 weeks.
Very good. Thank you so much.